What does it take to run a small farm in Maine? When it comes to farming, Maine is going against the grain. All over the country, the number of farmers and the acreage of farmland is shrinking, and the average age of farmers is getting older. Not here. There are more farms, more farmland, and more farmers than a decade ago. And according to the most recent statistics from the USDA, the number of young farmers, farmers 34 years old and younger, grew by nearly 40% between 2007 and 2012. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we'll discuss what it takes to establish a farm and make it viable in Maine. From challenges and opportunities to support services available for new farmers. Have you always wanted to try your hand at farming? Maine Calling is next. But first, this news update. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. For some, the idea of owning and running a farm is the stuff of fantasy. You know, the idyllic setting, placid cows, robust crops, and crowing roosters. But once you get past the fantasy, what does it really take to start up and maintain a successful farm? Today, we're going to learn about the promise and pitfalls of running a small farm in Maine. With me in our studio, Tori Lee Jackson. She is an associate professor of agriculture and chair of the Beginning Farmer Resource Network of Maine. Piper Dumont is the director of education at Wolf's Neck Farm in Freeport. And Donovan Todd is the State Executive Director of the Farm Service Agency for Maine. Thank you all for being here today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
As always, we want to hear from you. Have you ever wondered what it takes to be a farmer? Ever dreamed of it? What questions would you need to have answered? We have the experts. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a tweet at Maine Calling or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. Piper, Tori, I'm going to start with you.
Sure.
Why do so many young farmers choose Maine?
Well, Maine is a really great place to farm, and that's one of the first things I tell people when I meet with them for the first time. We have a very strong local food culture, one of the strongest in the country, actually. We go back and forth with Vermont as one and two every year. And there's a great support network among service providers, but also among farmers themselves. So folks who are just getting started can really find their place pretty easily in Maine.
And who are these young farmers? Are they mainly people who grew up in Maine or mainly people who have come here from somewhere else?
It's actually all over the board. It used to be that if you grew up on a farm, then you became a farmer, but that is no longer the case. It's really folks from all over the country, from all walks of life, from all different career paths who are becoming farmers. And the age range is wide as well. People who come straight out of college programs or people who have been doctors and lawyers or some other career say, you know what, I think I want to change my lifestyle. I'm going to go into farming.
Okay. Donovan, what kind of overall trends is the Farm Service Agency seeing? We've already established a lot more young farmers. So there's certain kinds of farms that are more popular than they used to be, some kinds of farms less popular, places in the state that are seeing more farms?
We are seeing a major increase along the coastal area of Maine, the central Maine coastal sections. But overall, we're seeing growth throughout the state. And even in Aroostook County, we're seeing some diversity begin. More so than it used to be just potatoes and grains. Now we're seeing some vegetable production up there as well. So over the state, the majority, I'd say, from central Maine south is the biggest growth area. But all the way down east to Machias, and also we shouldn't forget the aquaculture section of farming, which is also becoming a big impact. It's going to be a huge impact in Maine in the future.
Among the terrestrial farms, are we seeing more livestock? Are we seeing more vegetables? Are we seeing more mixed farms?
It's a good mixture. It's a lot of mixture farms. We did see a real uptick in vegetables for a number of years. That's still coming, but we're also seeing that mixture, the variety, the diversity, that type of thing, which helps sustainable ag.
Piper, you work with teens who are interested in going farming among your other projects, I understand. Who are teenagers who have already identified at that point that they're interested in farming?
Well, I think farming has experienced a bit of a resurgence lately. So it's kind of cool these days, so that helps a little bit. And so we tend to work with teens who might be interested. They're interested for a number of reasons, and it might be that they're interested in, oh, that kind of ideal of farming, and I want to live that lifestyle. Or for some of them, it's a first job, and it's kind of a great opportunity to get that point of entry into the workforce. And for some of them, it might be that they love eating and cooking, and they want to explore how does that food get produced and where does it come from, and can I produce foods that taste even better or that work for sort of some of my experimentation from a culinary perspective.
Well, it's interesting because Piper was talking about people who have second careers. Maybe we're a lawyer first and then become a farmer. Tell me about a teenager who, Tori was saying that. Piper, tell me about a teenager who has this job on a farm. What kind of skills that young person is going to take with them no matter what their career is?
Yeah, absolutely. So teens are basically in a sustainable agriculture immersion program. So they're spending all of their time really learning the ins and outs of farming and the day-to-day. And one of the things that I think a lot of us fail to recognize is how sort of complicated and transdisciplinary agriculture is. And so they're not only learning agricultural sciences, including horticulture and integrated pest management, they're also learning sort of business management. They're doing sort of, okay, how do I do crop planning? How do I do enterprise budgeting? What about marketing and outreach? Where am I going to sell my produce? And they manage our Teen Ag program. They manage our Community Supported Agriculture program, so our CSA. They also manage our farm stand, and they work with our events. We have farm-to-table events, and they provide produce for that and for our campground. And so they are kind of figuring out, I think, a lot of skills about managing relationships, but also thinking about from a financial perspective and otherwise. So there's a lot that happens. And again, this whole idea of workforce development. So they're learning about accountability, about clocking in, what it means when you don't show up. It's not the same as, oh, I didn't do my math homework. When you don't show up and you didn't let anybody know, that has huge implications for the rest of the crew. So there are a lot of those types of learning that are a natural part of this kind of work.
Tori, tell us about the Beginning Farmer Resource Network of Maine.
Absolutely. So BFRN started in 2012 as a result of a professional development project run by Alan Mallory, who works with Extension as well. And during this project, we realized that sitting around the table as service providers in this industry, it was super valuable for us to just have the experience to talk to each other. And we decided to formalize a little bit and become a group that meets more regularly. So we have a two-pronged goal, and one really is professional development so that each of us is better at our jobs and we can serve farmers better. But it's also to kind of fill the gaps. We identify places where there really isn't a resource that's available for farmers to figure out, what do I do about climate change, for example? We've got a project coming up about that. What do I do about family relational issues? We don't really have an agency that deals with relationships on the farm. So we've identified that, and we're going to start addressing that this year as well.
Okay, Don, and I'll ask you too, if someone's a new farmer, how does the Farm Service Agency help?
Well, our mission is to help beginning farmers, basically, and our objective is to help family-sized operations. So we hopefully are one of the first stops that people make, and we luckily are part of the BFNR group, so if we know of all the other contacts where they can get assistance. But our main objective is we have the working capital available for farm ownership loans, operating loans. We even have youth loans to help young people 10 years old or older to start getting their feet wet, so to speak. We also do guaranteed loans, so we're kind of the onboarding financial assistance for beginning farmers who may not have the equity or the background that a bank or a commercial lender would want. And we also do supervised credit, which is kind of unique. We don't just lend the money and walk away with a mortgage. We actually meet with them, help them do business analysis every year. We help try train the people to become successful so that they can move on to other commercial lending. So hopefully we would be the first place to go, and I would encourage young people or older people, anybody starting, to come visit our offices and find out all the ins and outs, so to speak, of getting into farming.
I'm going to ask all of you this question. I'm going to start with you, Donovan. What are the hard questions you ask people to ask themselves before they take this leap?
That is a great question. And one of the things that always strikes me is when somebody walks in our office and says, I want a farm, what do I do? The first thing you should do is have a plan. And we're like any business. Agribusiness is a business. You need a business plan. You have to have a plot laid out of how you're going to approach entering into farming, what you want to do, what you want to produce, what your market's going to be. It's a lot of work. So we encourage people, take some time, do a plan, get a niche if you can, and start planning well ahead of time, maybe a couple of years before you're going to actually enter farming, because it is a major leap. And we do not want to lend people money and get them in trouble.
How often do you have that happen? Someone walks in the office and says, I want a farm.
We have that happen more often than not. A lot of times. We're seeing a better clientele, I guess you could say that.
A more organized clientele.
More organized. I think the community is starting to learn, hey, this isn't just a way of life per se, it's a business. So we're seeing some improvements there, and I think a lot is through the efforts of the BF&I group, and all of us as service providers are doing a better job with outreach, saying, hey, get prepared.
All right. Piper and Tori, same question. Piper, if someone's interested in going into farming, what do you spread before them and say, consider these things?
Try it. Like, find ways to actually experience the work of farming and see how that goes. And we're really lucky in Maine because there are a lot of resources that allow you to experience farming, whether it's MOFCA's apprenticeship program or, you know, and there are lots of opportunities, or Wolf Neck Farm, our teen ag program. But get a sense of whether the work actually suits you. I've worked on a number of farms, including some apprenticeships, and you find out pretty quickly if someone is maybe more attracted to the ideal than the reality. And that's a good thing. And I would absolutely second what Don was saying, that a plan, this is a business. And one of the things that I think a lot of us are seeing is that farmers are coming in, they have a lot of energy, a lot of enthusiasm, they really want to grow crops, and you can, or, you know, raise livestock or whatever, and you can produce some amazing food, but if you don't know how to run a business, it's not going to work out for very long.
Okay, and Tori, your turn. What do you say to people?
Well, this is exciting because these are the exact two things I had planned to say. It really is all about coming in with some hands-on experience and recognizing what it is to be a farmer. Farming is not a 9-to-5 job. It's not 40 hours a week. It is truly dusk till dawn every day of the year, particularly if you are managing for livestock. So getting some hands-on experience and knowing precisely what it is that you're saying you want to do is step one. And then it really is about research and marketing, having a marketing plan, knowing exactly who your customer is. If you're planning a retail business, talk to your potential customers. If you're planning a wholesale business, talk to those customers. Make the phone calls. Speak with the buyers at a grocery store or a school or some other institution, and actually make those direct connections. Because if you don't have that market in place, as Piper was saying, you can be the best producer of, let's say, apples in the state of Maine. But if you don't have a customer who's willing to pay you a profitable price, it's not going to work.
Are there places where the market is saturated, and are there opportunities? You mentioned apples. Are there already enough apple growers in Maine, and that's probably not the best place to go, or not really?
It completely depends on where you are and who you're marketing towards. So I think an example that I could pretty safely say is right now there are a lot of vegetable producers who are gearing themselves towards the greater Portland area in the summertime. If someone came to me and said, that's my plan, I would say, okay, you need to do even more legwork, because who are you going to reach that who's not already being served?
So if someone says, I want to sell my produce at the farmer's market in Portland, not probably the best plan.
Call the market manager, tell them what your experience is, tell them what you can bring that might be different from what already exists. But you might want to go in another direction.
Okay. You have thoughts, Donovan?
I would second that. And we have tried to encourage young people to come in that want to do something to do exactly that. Don't just grow tomatoes or cucumbers. Go find out what's missing, create a niche for yourself, and then go sell it.
So what is missing? When you look at other states and you see where some young farmers have had success, what's going on in other places that might work here that really hasn't been? Is there anything?
It's all in how you market, I think. A lot of it's marketing. And if you could grow any crop, as long as you've got the market, like Tori said. So I wouldn't discourage anybody from going in any particular area. Some of the things we see that are growing rapidly in Maine right now is grain, mm-hmm. aquaculture. There's a multitude. There's as many opportunities as you can think of as long as you have a plan and a market for it when you get done.
Sure, we did a show on brewing in Maine, and the Maine brewers would like to have more grain
yes.
for their breweries, but there's yes. the issue of the different kind of land, isn't there? We don't have these vast swaths of land to grow grain on in most of Maine as they do in the Midwest.
And the other part of that is you have to make money. And when you're looking at grain production, we'll say, I'm going to just use Aroostook County as a case. Their main cash crop is potatoes, and grain's a secondary crop. Until that crop can produce the general return as a potato crop can, it's going to be difficult for grain farmers to really get in. It's coming. We're seeing an increase because of the brewery industry mainly. We're seeing that start to develop. And Maine used to be a huge grain producer. Somerset County alone used to have like 12 million bushels of wheat produced every year. And we've lost that in the 1800s. So it's coming back slowly.
Are there any other places where there's an... Oh, go ahead, Piper.
Well, I was just going to say, I really feel like I need to mention one of our initiatives, which is our Organic Dairy Farmer Research and Training
yes.
Program, because it was born out of exactly this type of assessment, looking at sort of where is their need and the market. There's only 5% of the market is organic dairy currently, and the demand is much higher. And one of the things that we're noticing is dairy farmers are getting older, and there isn't the same sort of succession plan where their kids used to take over the farm. In addition, organic dairy often guarantees a higher price point, which helps with profitability. And Maine also has it's unique in New England and in other places because it has a lot of land. And we have a lot of land that is really good for pasture. So that works out really well and sort of links well with organic dairy. And so I would say, you know, that is definitely a niche market. It was part of our thinking. And folks who are – one of the things that can be challenging is learning all of the regulations and sort of certification processes for organic dairy. And that's part of why we created a 2-year residential program for apprentices to really get immersed in organic dairy so that when they're going out, they don't have the experience of not having done the business planning, not having done the work, not knowing record keeping and those sorts of things, which are imperative when you're doing organic.
But this is very challenging. I mean, many of us have seen the film Moo Milk and have mm-hmm. followed the story of those farmers trying mm-hmm. very hard. And if you're in a community where it's going to cost a lot to transport your product, mm-hmm. no matter how well trained you are and how much you, you know, what a good farmer you are, there are challenges that are very difficult to surmount.
Absolutely. And I think that some of those, that's part of what we're trying to do, is to sort of give you a little bit of support going in so you can see the challenges, but also have a sense of how you can navigate around them. One of the things that I will say is that this program was born out of Stonyfield Organics approached us, and they basically are looking for organic dairy farmers. Mm. There's not enough production in New England to meet their need, and what they're looking for is for us to train farmers so that they have folks who can... they can get their milk and turn it into yogurt and other dairy products.
Well, Piper, it's the Organic Dairy Apprenticeship Program. We'll be sure and put something on our MPBN Maine Calling Facebook page. We do have to take a break. When we come back, we'll get your comments and questions. We're talking about small farms, new farms in Maine. Please stay with us.
You make Maine Calling possible, as does New England Music Camp, presenting its 37th annual Pops Concert at the Messalonsky Performing Arts Center on July 16th. NEMusicCamp.com.
Next week, Republicans will convene in Cleveland to nominate Donald Trump for president. NPR and PBS NewsHour will be there too. We're teaming up to bring you live coverage each night. I'm Rachel Martin. Join me, Judy Woodruff, and Gwen Ifill for speeches, interviews, and analysis live from the Republican National Convention. Special coverage from PBS NewsHour and NPR News.
And you can hear full coverage Monday through Thursday evening next week, starting at 8 on both Maine Public Radio and Maine Public Television. You hear the mentions of our Maine Public Classical channel, but perhaps streaming the signal isn't convenient, and you don't live near one of our classical FM signals in Portland at 104.1, Bangor at 106.1, Waterville at 99.7, or Freiburg at 91.5.
The other solution is an HD radio receiver, a digital signal that piggybacks the main public radio signal you're listening to right now. With an HD radio receiver, you can hear both our channels crystal clear just about everywhere you hear Maine Public Radio, and you can often easily hook those receivers up to existing stereos. For more information, visit mpbn.net. Thanks.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, Small Farming in Maine. With me in the studio, Piper Dumont, the Director of Education at Wolf's Neck Farm in Freeport. Donovan Todd is the State Executive Director of the Farm Service Agency for Maine. Tori Lee Jackson is Associate Extension Professor of Agriculture and Natural Resources with the University of Maine Cooperative Extension and Chair of the Beginning Farmer Resource Network of Maine. We invite you to join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mpbn.net, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. On the line with us now, Daniel McPhee. He is Educational Programs Director for the Maine Organic Farmers and Gardeners Association. Dan, welcome to Maine Calling.
Thanks for having me.
Last summer, you conducted a survey on how beginning farmers in Maine define success. What did you find out?
Yeah, so last year we decided that we wanted to do an in-depth survey of all of the participants of our Journeyperson program. It's a program that's been running for about 15 years, a little more than 15 years now. And we were curious to see concretely how were people doing down the road. And we were actually honestly very surprised to find that 92% of those participants are still farming today. And as part of that in-depth survey, we got to see what types of farms they were operating and, you know, what they felt they still needed support on or what they were still aspiring to. And as you might expect, each one of them, you know, was different. But there are some commonalities that to me were a little bit surprising and I think are emerging as, you know, common part of the conversation now with beginning farmers.
Daniel, before you tell me what those are you on a speakerphone by chance?
I'm not. No.
Okay. All right. So you just sound a little faint. So what are the commonalities that you're finding?
So we're finding that a lot of people, like Tori mentioned, are coming from other careers. A lot of beginning farmers, we're seeing the age incoming getting older over the years. And we're also seeing that a lot of people are farming alongside other work. And they're happy with that arrangement as opposed to aspiring to being a full-time farmer. They maybe have one member of the household working off-farm and one working on-farm running the farm business. And that seems to be a comfortable, secure arrangement for a lot of people who are concerned about issues like healthcare, maybe starting young family and worried about some of the vagaries of, you know, the farm business in Maine, which is better than lots of places, but still uncertain.
All right, Dan. I understand that MOFCA has really great programs. You probably had your ears burning at the beginning of the program when one of our guests mentioned that there are terrific programs for young farmers, and we'll definitely post information about those on the MPBN Maine Calling Facebook page. Thanks so much for calling in. Daniel McPhee, Educational Programs Director for the Maine Organic Farmers and Gardeners Association. Tori, you were nodding. You find the same thing.
Absolutely. About 93% of Maine farms have some source of on-farm income, and that's primarily to sort of even things out, especially in the beginning, the first 10 years, when profitability is hit or miss, if it's there at all. But also health insurance, Daniel mentioned, that's a really big one. It's still a bit tough to find a health insurance policy if you're strictly a farmer. So having an off-farm job, whether it's a partner or if you're farming part-time, is critical to the success of the vast majority of farms of all sizes in Maine.
All right, we're going to move to Chris, who's calling from Unity College. Chris, I understand you run the McKay Farm and Research Station. That's fairly new. Tell me about it.
That is. It's a relatively new addition to Unity College. It was donated by Isabel McKay and Rick Thompson back in 2013. I just came on board to be the manager and to try to reach out and draw a lot of the young and new farmers into McKay Farm and to let them know that we're here as a resource in addition to MOFCA. And we're fortunate that MOFCA is a neighbor of ours right here in Thorndike. So we rely on them as well. But what we do have available for small farmers, new farmers, or even existing, you know, established farmers is we have space available where farmers can rent either greenhouse space for their production or field space. They have the added benefit of being attached to the college so that we can share those experiences with our students. There might be faculty members interested in doing something with a particular crop or a crop amendment. So they would have that at their disposal. So what we're really trying to do in moving forward with McKay Farm is create kind of an incubator, a farm incubator, and serve as an aggregator to the farming community in Maine, especially the small farming community.
Great.
So
well, Chris, yeah, thank you so much for calling in. I'm going to move on to the other calls. Your call is also quite faint, but I appreciate you calling in and invite you to post information on the MPBN Maine Calling Facebook page. We're going to move to Jonesboro and Nancy. Hi, Nancy. Go ahead. You're on Maine
Hi.
Calling.
Good. Thanks. I would recommend, I'm an organic farmer, have been for some years raising sheep and chickens and geese, ducks, rabbits, and produce. I would recommend, number one, people read a lot. And then there's a very important point, I say, having been alone on my farm for some years, can you motivate yourself to work with no one else there? This is not always easy, and you have to know yourself. I would also say that the university and government bureaucrats and so on ought to encourage more home gardeners to expand into small local farming, and that wherever farmers, new farmers, plant themselves, they should find out what is eaten locally. For example, here in Washington County, people love beet greens. So I started growing beets that had more greens than beets. And also, really important, try not to get tangled up with loans and banks and government bureaucrats. Talk with other organic farmers, and I hope that organic is going to be emphasized rather than IPM, and the P in there is pesticides.
IPM, you mean integrated pest management? Yeah.
Yes, and it does include pesticides, which is too bad, because talking about climate change, which you mentioned early on, using fossil fuel-based fertilizers and pesticides is just not a good idea.
Nancy, let me ask you, how long have you been a farmer in Maine?
Since 1979.
So you have beat the trend.
The trend?
You're ahead of the curve.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. And I did it as a lifestyle thing. And I also found, speaking of, living rural is a culture shock for many city people. I mean, I have a septic tank. I have my own well. You know, I have a watery clay basement and isolated, although I like that. But it's very different. And people should go to the Common Ground Fair and talk to the real farmers there who sell all their produce. I wish you had more real farmers on the program, but anyway, talk to the real farmers there and see if you can visit them and just hang out and find out what it really is. Living rural is very different.
Okay, Nancy, thank you. Okay, I'm gonna move on. Thank you so much for calling and sharing your perspective. Tori, are the kind of things that Nancy's talking about, the shock of living rural and finding the motivation to get up every morning, the very issues that you're hearing when you work with your young farmers?
It certainly can be. Although, as Piper was saying earlier, that's often the draw for a lot of folks looking for a career that they can do where they can work outside and they can kind of be their own boss living in this beautiful state of Maine. You know, there are a lot of upsides to farming in Maine, not least of which is our gorgeous environment. And so if that's not something you're familiar with, there can be a shock. But I think for the most part, that's the one thing a lot of people kind of are betting on. There are lots of other things that perhaps they're not and do become a shock. Pest management would be one, for example. So expecting that you're going to be able to farm without managing for pests and diseases in some way, that would be a shock to figure out that, oh, yes, you actually do need to have a plan for that.
All right. Thanks, Nancy, for your call. If you'd like to join the conversation, 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. You can also send us an email at talk@mpbn.net or post on our Facebook page. We're going to Jane, who is calling from outside of Orono. Hi, Jane. Go ahead.
Hi. Good afternoon. I'd like to make several points. Some are reiterating some of the things other people have expressed. But first of all, you know, we've grown to the point, and I was one of the originals, where we have farmers markets in a more or less statewide, and the farmers have to travel to the markets and hire people to sell their food. What we need is from the very concerned end of the bureaucrats to try to start up some distribution centers where the farmers can bring their food to one point and it is sold from there into larger markets, even canning or some other kind of thing. We need to bring back some of the ethics of the Grange, where people supported each other on the land and the young people could be taught how to cooperate and support each other in the ethics of land use and the land itself. All the details of farming, from microbes to compost and all of that, everybody loves to get into that. But it's really important to make it an easier thing. Access to land should be made much more easier. Everything shouldn't be looked at as how many dollars can you squeeze out of that tomato? Or, you know, what kind of loans can we get you into in order to fulfill your dream? We really need to get food production going.
All right, Jane, thanks so much for your call. And she brings up a topic that has come up in previous Maine Calling programs, which is the issue of distribution. This is something, and you are all nodding as she says this. Donovan, is there any momentum behind any kind of effort to create some sort of either regional or statewide distribution network that is meaningful for rural farmers?
Yes. There's been a lot of discussion in the last 4 or 5 years, especially food strategies being worked on right now throughout the state. There are different enterprises starting up throughout the state that are becoming food hubs. And how do you define food hub? There's many different definitions. But yes, that is a big issue. And for me personally, I think Maine is sitting in a perfect position because we have a large land base. We have a large population just south of us, and we should be feeding all the East Coast. And with that opportunity, somebody in some coalition, it is coming. We're seeing it start. The discussions are starting. The people are starting to unite to develop these distribution systems. The key here, it costs a substantial amount of capital.
That was going to be my question. Why is this so tough? It feels like we've been talking about it and talking about it and talking about it.
It's going to take someone or some group that has the wherewithal and the right combination to put that all, it's coming. I'm seeing it happen before my eyes. We're watching this discussion happen more often with more people, and they're starting to put pieces together. And I think soon that's going to take place. There's a gentleman down east, and Tori probably recalls his name, has already got a trucking route started. We've got the young lady up north who's already has a truck route coming down through. It's going to take place. And when it does, it's going to help explode even further our agricultural sector in the state of Maine, which is going to help our whole economic system in the state, which is exciting.
And I would say in addition to that, yes, there is a huge startup cost to whatever sort of aggregation system that you are trying to put into place. But it also means that the farmer has to be willing to accept a wholesale price for their product. Mm-hmm. For most small farms and most beginning farms, I don't recommend wholesale because you cannot capture as much of that dollar as you need to bring back to the farm to be sustainable. A big piece of sustainable agriculture is not just sustaining our environment, but also economic stability. If you do not have enough money to put back into the farm or to bring home as income, the farm can't sustain itself. So, yes, there are lots of great things about farming, and yes, we need to grow more food. We can stand to grow a lot more of our own food here in Maine. But the farmers themselves need to make some money. And that's the part that makes it a little bit tricky when we talk about wholesale systems or aggregators.
Okay. We'll go to Marilyn, who's calling from Fairfield. Hi, Marilyn. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Hello. I have to totally agree with that last statement. Income money equals sustainability. You can't sustain a farm without income, enough income. And one of the comments years ago from some farm analyst was, if you can keep 10% of what you make, you're doing very well. So a farm that makes $10,000 and can only keep $1,000 will never support itself. And the other thing, I've been farming since 1973. We've had to grow our farm to be able to support ourselves because neither my husband nor I want an off-farm income. We think this country should have enough wherewithal to support its farmers. without having to have the farmers support the farm. That's my comment.
That's a good comment.
Absolutely. And just to, you know, kind of bear that out, Marilyn, for farms in Maine, there are, you know, for those who have been farming for 5 years or less, their net income is under $800 per year. Those in years 5 to 10 are up to maybe $20,000 on average. And even for those 11 years and older, $25,000 is the average income. So we're not talking about getting into farming to make money. It really is a subsistence income in many cases. And it's more about the lifestyle for a lot of folks, which is great, especially if they're making some of their own food as well.
Do you worry that with young farmers making these low incomes that this is going to be a trend, a temporary trend? People will look back and say, remember the early 2000s when people were farming before everybody realized how hard it was and then got out of it?
I don't worry as long as people go into it with their eyes open. If people don't spend the time to read the books, to meet with people, to talk with other farmers about what the real situation is, and they go into it expecting to replace their $50,000 off-farm income, yeah, they're going to be in trouble, and that would be a big problem.
I'd like to expand. I'm going to expose my age here a little bit. Back in the 70s, back with the land movement, this is different. I lived through that myself. We saw a lot of young people going back to the land, and it was more of a, I don't want to say hippie-ish, but it was that type of attitude about living off land. It wasn't a way of life, per se. Today, the young people and the older people coming back to it, they're coming back to it with a different mindset from my perspective. They're looking at it as a business, usually. They're looking at it as a way of life, and they understand it's not just roses, like your introduction was perfect. A lot of people have this rosy idea. It's a way of life. It's a tough way of life, but if you don't mind that and you want that, it's awesome. And that's what we're starting to see more of that thought. So I think it's not just a trend. I think this is going to be the set moving forward, and it's going to keep building. And hopefully, as we do that in developed markets, the money will increase and make it even more plausible for young people and older people to come into farming if they so wish.
Well, and one of the things that I'll add, too, is that I think that this generation is also learning from that sort of back-to-the-lander movement and some of the issues that have come up. So I have run into a number of farmers who are getting into their 60s, and they were part of that idealism. And I'm talking to them, and they're saying, I just don't know what I'm going to do. Because, and of course, this isn't everybody, but they're like, my kids are going to college. I don't know how I can pay for it. I don't have a retirement. I don't know how I'm going to do that. And when I started, I got to the end of the day and I had a kind of tired that was satisfying. And it was like, oh, look at all this work that I'd done. And now when I get to the end of the day, I'm a kind of tired that I'm not sure I can get up tomorrow morning and do it over again. My body hurts. And so I think that this generation can learn from this former generation and really look at, okay, what were some of the issues? How do we think about making a living in the short term, but also long term financial planning? How do we, you know, how does retirement fit in, but also succession planning? So there are a lot of programs now. Maine Farmland Trust is working on some of them, but where they're really looking at, okay, if you don't have kids who are going to take over the farm, what are other models where, you know, new farmers who are looking for a farm, who are looking for land, can maybe take that over in a way that also supports the farmer who's leaving his retirement.
All right. Well, we do have to take another break. Marilyn, thank you for your call. This is Maine Calling. We're talking about small farms in Maine.
You make Maine Calling possible, as does Casella, handling over 1 million pounds of recyclables daily in Maine through its Zero Sort program. Casella, giving resources new life.
On the next Fresh Air, reflections on being married to a Navy fighter pilot. We talk with Rachel Sarnes. Her new memoir, The War at Home, is about the impact of her husband's long and frequent absences on the marriage and the difficulty she's had maintaining her own identity when his military career has defined so much of their lives. Join us.
And join us for Fresh Air this evening at 7 o'clock. And join us at 2 o'clock following Maine Calling for World Affairs. Today's speaker, Robert Wirth, with the New York Times Magazine, will discuss the 5-year-old Arab Spring. That's World Affairs coming up at 2 o'clock following Maine Calling. here on MPBN Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, the challenges and opportunities of running a small farm in Maine. In the studio with me, Donovan Todd, State Director for the Farm Service Agency for Maine, Piper Dumont, Director of Education at Wolf's Neck Farm in Freeport, Tori Lee Jackson, Associate Extension Professor of Agriculture and Natural Resources with the University of Maine Cooperative Extension, and Chair of the Beginning Farmer Resource Network. Join us, 1-800-399-3566. This is from our Facebook page. And James, I am a disabled combat vet that is medically retired. I have some resources, and we are working towards having a sustainable and organic farm somewhere in the more remote parts of Maine for more affordable land. What resources are available to me? I am quite limited in what I can do, but what would it be best to do, schooling or get someone to teach me hands-on?
I am so happy that we have this question, James, because you're in excellent company. Maine has a lot of returning military veterans, about 130,000 in the state of Maine, which puts us at the top of the heap in terms of per capita veterans in overall population. So we actually have a newly formed Farmer Veteran Coalition, which is a state chapter of a national organization that is growing by leaps and bounds, and it is meant precisely to fulfill some of the needs of folks in your position. So I highly recommend connecting with FVC and also AgriBility, which is affiliated with UMaine Extension and works closely with Farmer Veteran Coalition. And their goal is really to help people stay farming or get started in farming, given any physical or mental or emotional limitations that they may have. And we see that fairly often with our returning military vets.
Someone can just Google Maine Farmer Veteran Coalition
they
and find
can.
It. Okay, and we'll also try to find that.
Or they could call any one of us and we can provide them with the number.
Absolutely.
Okay, yeah. That's a great question then. We're going to go to Ann, who's calling from Appleton. Hi, Ann, go ahead.
Hi there. I have a question for the panel about I had a business plan for converting my rather large vegetable garden. I went out and I talked to producers. They agreed that they would buy my produce. And when I showed up with delivery, they said they got it much cheaper than for what I could produce it for. So I did go around to a bunch of other places and I ended up, you know, just taking a loss. And I wondered what the panel had to say for advice.
That's just what Tori said earlier. You got to have your market locked down. That's unlike what one of the callers indicated, that we try to give people money. We don't try to give people money. We try to make sure when we give them a loan, a lot of people argue we make it too difficult to get the money at times. But we do it because you have to know what your market is. And we require a lot of the applicants to come to us to have a written agreement with people to purchase what you're producing. And you've run into an issue that many beginning farmers hit, and I'm sad to hear it's happened to another one. But I would encourage any person that's getting into farming, make sure you know where your market is and what the price points are, because that is always an issue, and that's where it falls apart.
Don, you're exactly right. We emphasize having a marketing plan and making those connections, and congratulations, Ann, for doing that. The one thing that you may have missed is actually having a written agreement or a contract. And being able to document that market research is key, not only for your own business plan and knowing for yourself that you can sell your products when they're ready, but also, you know, if you're in a situation where you have an investor or a lender, they're going to want to see that that's documented as well. And a contract is a great way to do that.
All right. Thanks for your call, Ann, and good luck to you. We're going to go to Peter, who's calling from North Berwick. Hi, Peter. Go ahead.
Good morning. I have a question about remineralization because in 1977, I cut down some woods in the town I live in, North Berwick, and have started a garden there. And I put a tremendous amount of organic matter in over the decades. And about 10 years ago, I started having soils tests done. And I've been adding minerals. And I just wondered if you could speak to the problem that acid rain causes in terms of destroying minerals all over the globe now. And will we ever be able to really get sustainable agriculture until we really cut down on pollution in a big way?
That's a tough question, isn't it?
That is a tough question, and unfortunately I'm not a soil scientist,
right.
But we do have some of those. So I can definitely put you in touch with someone, Peter, who can help you kind of talk through that issue on your specific operation. But soil management, really the basis of what organic farming was born to do, and a lot of what we do at the University of Maine is precisely that, researching our soils, because they're the basis of all agriculture. So I'll get in touch with you about who to talk to about that.
The other agency you should contact, your local NRCS office, Natural Resource Conservation Service, and they have a lot of technical assistance, and they can give you advice as well, hopefully.
All right. Well, I'm taking notes as fast as I can to get information on the Maine Calling Facebook page. Thanks, Peter, for your question. Tori, I'm always, throughout my reporting career, have always been amazed and astounded at what the UMaine Cooperative Extension offers and how little the rest of us seem to know about it. So here's your chance. What else, other than soil testing, can we turn to you for?
Absolutely. Well, thanks for the opportunity. UMaine Extension, for those who aren't familiar, has actually been around for 100 years, more than 100 years here in Maine. And we really have been the go-to resource for education and applied research for Maine farmers for over a century. We are definitely doing a lot with beginning farmers, and it's great that they have, you know, myriad resources to turn to, some of which we've brought up today. But what we really focus on is unbiased, research-based information. We don't have a dog in this race other than the research-based information. So we do crop variety trials, soil management, manure management, food safety, pest management, water quality, processing, business planning, really anything you can think of from the time a crop is grown to it gets to the consumer. The University of Maine Cooperative Extension has someone who can help you.
All right. And someone asked about resources in York County. Is there UMaine Cooperative Extension?
Absolutely. Yes. You want to talk with Frank Wertheim, York County office.
Okay, Frank, sit by your phone. There you go. That's from Facebook. We have a tweet. In Norway, we are creating a micro-distribution program with a food hub for farmers. So we've got thumbs up in the studio. Donovan was right. It is happening. We're going to go to Clinton and Jenny. Hi, Jenny. Go ahead.
Hi, I just wanted to call. I'm a dairy farmer in Maine's dairy capital. We have 5 family farms here producing more milk than any other town in the state of Maine. And, you know, some of our farms are going back over 200 years. And I just think it's fabulous that we have so many people working so hard between UMaine Co-op Extension, Wolfneck, all these organizations working so hard, including the Maine Food Strategy, which is doing brilliant work, bridging gaps, trying to bring together all the pieces from the consumer to the people who are focusing on those who are facing inaccessibility and unable to afford food, to the people who actually process the food, to the people who grow the food. So, you know, infrastructure is so key, and by working together, all sizes of farms, all systems, Maine can really be the breadbasket and the food basket for itself and for the region. And I really felt it was just awesome to listen to all these different perspectives and all these people who are so eager to be a part of this.
Well, Jenny, thanks so much for calling. And one of the things you said is going to make me turn to Piper, because you want to talk about the role of all of these people coming together and tackling what's another big problem in Maine, which is food insecurity.
Absolutely. So Maine is the most food insecure state in New England, and it has the second highest rate of very low food security in the country. And the problem is getting worse. And one of the things that I think is really exciting in agriculture in Maine is that folks are really tuning into that connection between our farms and folks having access to fresh, nutritious produce. One of the things that we do as part of our teen ag program is the teens are growing thousands of pounds of produce that goes to area food pantries. We also have a certain number of our community-supported agriculture shares are allocated for SNAP recipients, and they're at 40% of the typical cost, and you can pay it weekly because often the lump sum that's required causes inaccessibility. But I also want to give a shout out to Good Shepherd Food Bank, because their Mainers Feeding Mainers program is ingenious, and it's really helping to bridge that gap in places where for a farm it might not make financial sense to harvest those carrots that got overrun with weeds. But if we could have a gleaning corps come in and do that, or if, you know, things aren't looking quite up to snuff for the market, they can distribute it to a food pantry. And it's really great. And I think there's a lot of movement here as well, because the small and sustainable sort of boutique farms have often been associated with more affluent folks. And how do we sort of increase access so that all of us within the food movement are working to support the sort of health of it, you know, of our communities as and the ecological vitality as well.
Sure, and efforts all over the state. Barbara Murphy, who's a regular guest here, has started a couple really incredible farms in Western Maine. We've talked about those on the air, and I know in a lot of towns there are programs where people can just bring produce from their garden and bring them to the local food pantry. I'm going to try to squeeze in one more call before we say goodbye. Felix, go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Hi. A couple of years ago, I read a story about some commercial outfit that was planning to build some giant, one or more giant greenhouses, talking acres in size.
Madison.
And
yeah, that's going on.
I don't. Did that plan ever come to fruition?
Oh, sure. You can buy those tomatoes in your local grocery store, Backyard Farms, right? Yeah. That's not exactly a small farm, though,
no,
is it?
Yes. Major acres under glass.
Exactly. They are one of the few that we would actually categorize as a large farm here in Maine.
Felix, thanks so much for calling. Since that call was quick, we'll try one more. Hi, Hildy. If you can be quick, go ahead, please.
Sure, thanks. I'm Hildy Ellis from Knox Lincoln Soil Water Conservation District, and I represent the Maine Association of Conservation Districts on the BFRN network. And I just wanted to let people know that their conservation districts, which represent every county in the state, also have programming and resources for beginning farmers. We are in particular offering a pasture management and grazing course on July 30th, an all-day program that includes teaching your livestock to eat weeds. So just another resource, your local conservation, soil and water conservation district for farmers.
Okay, well, Hildy, thanks so much for calling. I have been taking notes. I have to be able to read my handwriting when we get off the air right now. But if you can check out the MPBN Maine Calling Facebook page, we'll be posting some of these resources mentioned on today's terrific program. Thank you all. Tori Lee Jackson, Associate Extension Professor of Agriculture and Natural Resources with the University of Maine Cooperative Extension and Chair of the Beginning Farmer Resource Network of Maine. Piper Dumont, Director of Education at Wolf's Neck Farm in Freeport. Donovan Todd, State Executive Director of the Farm Service Agency for Maine. John Keimel ran the board today. Allie Burns answered your calls. You can find past editions of Maine Calling as well as a link to our archives at mainecalling.net. This program will be rebroadcast this evening at 8. And Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. Tomorrow on the program, join me for a conversation about what some say is the hottest read of the summer. We'll hear from the author of Sweet Bitter, a novel that the New York Times calls the kitchen confidential of our times. Joining our conversation will be Maine's Kate Christensen and Sam Hayward. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.